Okay, so welcome to Parshas Shavua. This week's Parsha is Parshas Vayakhel. So Yakhel is an interesting Parsha because the Parsha is all about the Mishkan. Essentially, it's a repetition of Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh, and the beginning of Kisisa, where Hashem commands Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people what they should donate in terms of materials, what they should build, how they should design it, the clothes of the Kohanim, and so on and so forth, up until the beginning of Kisisa, where we learn about the Keteris, and we learn about the sink, the basin, the kiyor. And then we have all the story of a golden calf and the whole thing. And then we have this week's Parsha, where Vayakhel Moshe gathers all the people and he tells them about the Mishkan. And we have Parshas Yakhel and Pekudei going through the whole Mishkan again. You'll notice if you look at the Chumash, you'll see that the next two Parshas are very few Rashis. And the reason is because Rashi points out that he already explained the Mishkan. So except for a few little things here and there, basically he's relying on his commentary in Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh. So that in itself is interesting. So let's just have a look at it first of all. I'm just going to see how we. Hold on a second. There we are, one second. Okay, why can't I? Oh. Okay, I hope it's there, it's fine. Okay, so have a look at the beginning. Number one, it's hard to see a little bit at the beginning, it's cut off for some reason. It says, Vayakhel Moshe's Klav Das B'nei Yisrael, Moshe B'nei gathers the people. And he says to them, Eilat Dvorim, this is the thing I should tziva Hashem Lasos Oysom. Hashem is commanded. And then he says about Shabbos. 6 days a week, you should do Malacha, and the seventh day, year, Lachem Kodesh. Shabbos, and Hashem should be holy. Shabbos for Hashem. It's a punishment if a person doesn't keep Shabbos. If it's intentional, of course, with a warning. And then the last pasuk over there says, Loisavaru, you shouldn't light fire. And so on. And then it goes to the Mishkan. Now, of course, interestingly enough, the first time around, the same thing happens. We have Truma and Tetzaveh, and then the very end of the whole Mishkan, in the beginning of Parashas Kisisa, we also have the Mitzvah of Shabbos. Here we have the same thing, just the other way around. Moshe Rabbeinu gathers the people, and he first tells them about Shabbos, and then he tells them about the Mishkan and the whole story of building the Mishkan. The reason why Shabbos is put next to the Mishkan, as we know, is because we are taught that how do we know what aren't you allowed to do on Shabbos? First, we know how to build the Mishkan on Shabbos, but then we also know that what does it mean to keep Shabbos? It means not to do the things that it would take to build the Mishkan, which is the 39 melachos. Now, before we go further, just this idea that it's repeated, and it's repeated so much. So we find in the Torah, why would something get repeated? So one place we find this is in the story of the Shidduch of Yitzchak and Rivka. Avraham Avinu calls Eliezer, tells him you can't take a wife for Yitzchak in Canaan. You got to go to the thing, and the whole story. He goes, takes the camels. He asks Hashem for a sign if he finds a kind girl, and the whole thing. Then we find that Rivka comes down, and she goes to call Lavan. Lavan comes, and the whole thing. He comes and he sits down, and he tells the whole story again, and it's recorded in the Torah. Even though every word in the Torah is so counted, because the Chazal tell us that Chaviv, because the Torah of the servants of the Ovos, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, was precious to Hashem, so beautiful that it's worth repeating, even though some of the halacha is giving to us. We have to learn that from a few words in the Torah. It's not in great detail, and yet the story of Yitzchak and Rivka was considered so special and so precious and so beautiful that it was worth repeating so much. In other words, what do we see from there? We see that repetition in the Torah sometimes has to do with the fact, the importance, the significance, the preciousness of that, even in relation to other things in the Torah, that makes it, gives it the possibility, therefore, of being repeated. So therefore, this is also repeated. Why? What's the repetition here? The repetition here is the building of the Mishkan. The building of the Mishkan is precious. Why is building the Mishkan precious? Because, as we learned in the beginning of Parshas Truma, where Torah says, "V'asu li mikdash, you shall make a mikdash for me, v'shachanti b'soicham, and you will dwell in them." And we know the famous idea we mentioned many times. It doesn't say b'shachanti b'soichoy, I will dwell in it. It says I will dwell in them. B'soich, as the Shalom points out, b'soich kol echad ve'echad, I will dwell among each individual. In other words, the Mishkan is just a model, but really the point of the Mishkan is for Hashem to dwell in all of us, in our experience, in our homes, in our environments. In other words, the basis of the entire Torah really is building a Mishkan. It's building a home for Hashem. That's the basis of basically the entire Torah. And therefore, it's because it's such an important thing and it's such so significant and it plays such an important role. Therefore, the story of the Mishkan is repeated with such detail, even though other parts of the Torah aren't. And therefore, instead of just saying, Vayakal Moshe Rabbeinu gathered, and he told them what Hashem had told him, and they went ahead and they did it, and we'll know exactly what it's talking about because it was already talked about in Parashas Truma, Tetzaveh, and Kisisa. Nevertheless, the Torah repeats the whole thing again, and because of its chavivus, its preciousness, its importance, and so on. Now, if you have a look at the next one, number two, this one over here, says Rashi, Vayakil Moshe Rabbeinu gathered. When was this? L'mocharas yoyim ha-kippurim k'she yorad min ahor. It was the day after Yom Kippur, meaning Hashem gave the Torah on Shavuos. Then Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the mountain for 40 days, and he came down, and they served Egel Azov, and he smashed the Luchos. Went up a second time till on Shiv Asar B'Tammuz until Rosh Chodesh Elul, and Hashem did not forgive the Jewish people. Then he went up a third time, and he came down Yom Kippur, and Hashem forgave us. Gave us the second Luchos, and it was then that Hashem said we should build the Mishkan. Told Moshe Rabbeinu what to tell us, and Vayakil Moshe Rabbeinu gathers the entire nation, L'mocharas Yom HaKippurim, the day after Yom Kippur. All right. Now, the problem is like this. There's another time in the Torah it says, I just want to give a bit of a context here and share with you something that the Kliyokra says. There's another time it says, Mimocharas. Something else happened that day. Says Vayhi Mimocharas, look at number three. It was the next day. This is talking about after Yisroi came. Yisroi. It was the next day. Vayoshev Moshe Lishpoit Esa'om. And Moshe Rabbeinu sat down to judge the nation. Vayamed Ha'om al Moshe, and the people were standing in a queue to get judged by Moshe Rabbeinu. Min HaBoker Ad HaErev, from the morning until the evening. And then there's a whole story that Yisro gave advice to Moshe Rabbeinu how he should do it. He should do it a bit differently. He should appoint officers of 10, officers of 100, officers of 5,000, and so on. Says Rashi over there, what does it mean by Himi Mocharas? It was the next day. Motzo Yom HaKippurim means it was after Yom Kippur. Kach Shoninu B'Sifri, this is number four over here. This is what we learned in the Sifri. What does it mean the next day? It means the Mocharas Ridutoi Min Ahar. It's the day after Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain. Right? So, a very strange thing. The day after Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain, which is Yom Kippur, the day after, two things are taking place. One is Moshe Rabbeinu is gathering the Jewish people, all of them, men, women, and children, together to tell them about this important mitzvah of building a Mishkan. And also, he's starting to judge people to make sure what belongs to this one belongs to that one, if there's a dispute, if there's a conflict, and so on and so forth. How did all this take place in the same day? First of all, and also what's even more problematic, it says that he was judging people from the morning to the evening, which isn't such a problem because it doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu spent the entire day. There's a Rashi, which didn't make it on this copy for some reason, that says, obviously, we know that he didn't sit the whole day and judge Jewish people. There's other things to do. But it means that if Hashem says that if a person judges people properly and purely, then it's like he's doing it, it's like he's becoming part of Hashem's creator, creation. He's becoming like a shutev, a partner from Hashem to create the Maaseh Bereishis as it's in the creation of the world. Because in the creation of the world, it says Vayi Erev, Vayi Boiker. And therefore, if you become a shutev, if you become a partner to Hashem in the creation of the world, it becomes this idea that you are now part of the Creator, so to speak. You're joining Hashem in the creation of the world. And that's what it means. But still, why did it have to take place the same day? What's this idea? Why don't we just spend the day talking to people about the Mishkan? We'll put off the disputes. They can adjourn the trials to a different time. Says the Kli Yoker, two things. Says the Kli Yoker, a beautiful thing. Says one thing is, number one, Moshe Ben had to start the process. What was Moshe Ben doing? He's asking people, the first thing is, he's telling them we're going to build a Mishkan. But he says the way we're going to build a Mishkan is you have to donate stuff. Jewelry, gold, silver, about 15 different items. Wool, goat skins, tachash skins, the whole story. This money is going to, these materials are going to be used to build a holy Mishkan. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, we need to make sure, he says to the people, we need to make sure that everyone is donating what belongs to them. And if there's a dispute, and the dispute is what belongs to this person. Reuven says this item belongs to me. Shimon says it belongs to me. They have to settle that first because if the wrong person gives it, it means he's giving something that's really not his. He's giving something stolen. You can't have something stolen to build a Mishkan. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that let's start the process. Anyone who's got a dispute, you need to get judged first because you need to make sure who this belongs to before you contemplate donating it to the Mishkan. That's what the Kli Yoker says, a beautiful idea. And he continues and he says the root truth is also he was starting a process which would then bring peace. Because we know there was only really one time in the Midbar that there was true unity. And that's when they arrived at Har Sinai and it says, Vayichan Shom Yisrael, and the Yidden camped there. And Rashi says, Ki ish echad b'lev echad, like one man, like one heart, because everything else, there was always disputes. So over here, he was coming from Yom Kippur, a time of tshuva, a time of where people are awakened and to make more unity. Therefore, start to judge them so that the conflict should go away and it should be shalom because also to do with the Mishkan. First of all, you can't have materials that are going to be donated to the Mishkan that don't belong to the person. And second of all, you can't have a place that Hashem is going to dwell. Hashem doesn't dwell in a place of machloikas. So therefore, the Mishkan has to be in the context where there's machloikas. And therefore, on the same day that Hashem, that the Moshe Rabbeinu started this process of constructing people at the Mishkan, he also started the process of settling disputes in order to bring shalom, in order to bring peace. Okay. Now I'm just going to see if I can open up another attachment here. Give me one second. Let's see if this will work. One second. This might work. We'll stop sharing. We'll share a different one now. Give me one second. I want to show you an interesting Rambam. Think this is right. Yeah. Problem is, I'm not sure how to do this so that it's. Oh. Okay. So we learned in this parsha, so that's to do with the Mishkan, that's to do now why the instruction of the Mishkan happened the day after Yom Kippur in the same place, in the same time, I mean, all on the same day, Moshe Rabbeinu started settling disputes. One of the things that the Torah says here, that the Torah tells us in this parsha we learned before, it singles out one of the things you're not supposed to do on Shabbos, and that is you're not supposed to light a fire, and it says, Lo sevaaru esh. As we learned before, we cannot light a fire b'chol mosh v'yiseichem in all the places where you live and where you dwell. Okay. The Rambam says an interesting thing. If you look in the Rambam, I'm going to share with you a Rambam that's quite technical and halachic. We're going to learn a very beautiful idea from it. Hamavir kol shehu. If a person lights a fire on Shabbos, even if it's a small fire, then he has violated Shabbos. But that's if he wants and he needs the ashes. Now, what does that mean? on a purely halachic level. The Rambam is saying like this: there's a problem with fire. See, normally on Shabbos, a person is only guilty of breaking Shabbos if the melacha that he does is constructive, not destructive. So I'll give you an example. One of the melachas of Shabbos is sewing. You can't sew two pieces of material together. The opposite of that is koireya, to tear something, you undo the sewing. Or another example is a melacha on Shabbos, you're not allowed to build. Another melacha is you're not allowed to demolish. Now, the halacha actually is, let's take the building and demolishing, for example, right? If you demolish a building on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that, but you're not considered a full-blown breaking Shabbos. Why? Because it's a destructive melacha. In the times of the Beis Hamikdash, when they could convict someone who broke Shabbos mamash for capital punishment, they could never do that in such a case. He would not be chayev, because he did a melacha that's destructive, not constructive. Where I say, how come it's one of the 39 melachas? Says the Gemara that when are you guilty for breaking Shabbos? Only if you soyser amanas livnos. If you demolish a building or you demolish a room or you demolish something, but the purpose of the demolishing is to rebuild it better, to rebuild it again, then it's guilty, because then it's constructive and not destructive. Now, one of the melachos is burning. Burning is a destructive action. If you light a match, you are burning. You're just destroying the wood. If you light a table, you're destroying the table. Right? So, how you chayv? So the Rambam begins this halacha by saying, you only chayv if for some reason you need the ash. And he continues, avlim hivir derech hashkosa potur. But if you just lit a fire to burn something, now you just destroy something, you actually absolve, you're innocent. You're being destructive. Then he goes on and says, no, not always that's true. For example, if someone, let's say, burns, he's very angry with someone, and he burns his field in revenge. Now, revenge is obviously prohibited, but nevertheless, it's a constructive thing because he feels better now. So at least that's some benefit to him. It's not totally destructive. And therefore, that could be a thing. But the basic rule is, then stump to burn a fire, if you set something alight, I mean, the same thing would be if you need light, maybe. But if you set something alight, and all you have is ashes, that's not really one of the melachos. It has to be you need the ashes for some reason. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe in a talk explains an unbelievable thing. He says, why does Rambam start off like that? There's everything can be understood on two levels, and every one of the melachos of Shabbos can be also understood on two levels. Now, it is true that we learn on Shabbos you're not allowed to do the 39 melachos. But how do we know you're not allowed to do these 39 principal activities? These are the 39 things that were used to build the Mishkan, which means that there is a real role for these 39 things that can be done to build a Mishkan. So therefore, even though you're not allowed to build a fire, you're not allowed to make a fire on Shabbos, but during the week you have to make a fire, and if it's for a Mishkan, then it's got holiness. He said this as an introduction that we can actually take the sentence and we can explain it on a whole nother. In other words, each one of the 39 melachos actually represent an aspect of how we serve Hashem in the world to make our own spiritual and personal Mishkan. Yes, you're not allowed to do them on Shabbos, but they each represent something very important, spiritually speaking at least. So now, we're going to take this sentence, Hamavir Kol Shehu, if someone makes even a small fire, Chayev, he's obligated, he's guilty of Shabbos, but that's only if he needs the ephod, only if he needs the ash. So let's take it now in a positive way, not about being guilty about breaking Shabbos, but when is it considered a fire? In other words, when is a fire considered a fire to build a personal Mishkan? When you need the ash. What does that mean? So he said like this. He said a beautiful thing. I'm going to say it very briefly because it's a big, very deep, involved idea, but say it very briefly. We say that Neir Hashem Nishmas Adam, the neshama of a person is like a candle. The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, what does it mean like a candle? Just like a flame of a fire always burns upward. Why does it burn upward? Because actually the flame is always trying to depart. It's always trying to go away from the candle because it wants to become part of the heavenly fire. Right? Once you become part of the original fire, as explains over there. That's the neshama. Neshama is always the deep, the depth of a yid is a pintle of yid. It's like a candle. A candle that actually doesn't even want to be here in the body, just wants to be connected to Hashem's reality. And that part of the neshama comes out. For example, if a person is threatened to serve Avodah Zorah, then we find him throughout Jewish history, the yidden have given up their life for Hashem. They let that neshama burn and therefore have Mesiras Nefesh. And really become totally surrendered to Hashem and not to anything that's against Hashem, even if it means losing their life and so on and so forth. What does it mean, Hamma? What does it mean to light a fire? To light a fire means to really light that neshama. Not just it should be a small candle, but a person should be burning with the love of Hashem. A person should be burning with the Mesiras Nefesh to give himself over to Hashem, that he really just wants to be connected to Hashem. That's all he wants. And that's a very important part of serving Hashem. We should nurture the love of Hashem. We should flame the fires of loving Hashem. That's all true. Says the Rambam, however, Hamavir, if you create a fire, when is it considered a fire? When you need the ash. What does that mean? We know that everything is made up of four parts: dust, wind, water, and fire. The Chassidus explains that when you burn something, what happens is it changes. Why does it change to ash? Because what's actually happening is the fire is coming and it's extracting the wind and it's extracting the water. What's left? Just the dust. In other words, the ash, basically the dust. The ash is the lowest and the most physical part. Everything is made up of these four components. Those four components, some are more less tangible, more spiritual than others. The most physical, mundane, lowest component of existence is the dust. And in Yiddishkeit, that's actually the purpose of creation. The purpose of creation is to bring Hashem into the physical world. The purpose of the creation is for the neshama to be in a body and to serve Hashem and bring elokus, bring godliness into the physical world. The purpose of creation is to elevate the physical things in the world. Says if a person has a fiery love to Hashem, which is a beautiful thing. And that then would cause him to, let's say, just depart from this world. He wants to just become part of Hashem. It's a little bit like the sons of Aaron did. They were so inflamed with the love of Hashem, they just expired and Hashem left their body. That's not a real fire. That's a problematic fire. It was a very high madrega, but it's a problematic fire. When is it a good fire, says the Rambam? When is the fire of your Hashem really, really good? When actually you realize that the real service of Hashem, once you love Hashem so much, you think, you know what? If I love Hashem so much, what does Hashem really want me to do? That you need the Afer. You need the physical. You got to bring Hashem into the physical world. You got to elevate the physical world. And that's why a fire is not really a fire. And again, we're translating this spiritually speaking. A fire of love to Hashem is not really a fire unless you need the Afer, unless it comes down to the ashes, unless you know that serving Hashem needs to be with the Gashmi, with the physical world, and to elevate the physical world and making it a place for Hashem to dwell. Thank you very much, and have a good day and a good Shabbos, everyone.